Welcome to the Lobot Lounge, the gathering place of the gentleman nerds. The gentleman nerds are three entertainment aficionados who know each other through various media endeavors, who get together to discuss popular culture and all things geeky. As such, please be prepared for the potential of many spoilers. And now, on with our show.
Welcome to Wakanda International Airport.
Hey, everyone, come on over this way. Hi, welcome to Wakanda. Let me be the first to greet you. Wakanda forever. Yes, thank you. Hi. Yes, if you please step this way, I've got your complimentary vibranium. Yes, please. That's 100% pure vibranium. Do not take it through the metal. Oh, you know what? Go ahead and take it through the metal detectors. No one's going to know. Hey, do you have your passports? Let's get them all stamped. Thank you very much. And it looks like we're all here. So I've got a tour lined up for us. We're going to start at the giant panther head, and then we're going to go see the ape tribe with their giant gorilla hideout. And oh, hey, guys. Hey, welcome to the Lobot Lounge. I'm so glad you're here tonight because we are gathered to discuss Black Panther, the newest Marvel movie, and talk about what we saw and what we liked. And I hope you guys are ready to strap in because this is going to be a fun one. Gathered with me here in the Lobot Lounge is Aaron D'Arrive.
Is it okay to pet this rhino?
Ben Gibbs.
So do we get like a pet vibranium, or is that a thing that you buy at the store? I don't.
And I am your host and intellectual touchstone, Mark Finn. We are a man down tonight. Everyone playing the drinking game at home, raise your glasses to Joseph Fotinos. He is suffering from superhero fatigue, and he will be joining us for the next episode as someone who has dealt with various kinds of fatigue in the past. Our thoughts and prayers are with him, as always.
Yes. We will miss him.
So Black Panther, guys, how exciting is this?
Very.
I am stoked. I got to tell you, it's not my thought. It's actually the first person I saw sort of vocalize it was our friend and author, buddy, A. Lee Martinez, who said that he thinks that it's probably the best thing that could have happened to Marvel Studios is that they licensed out all their heavy hitters, because it forced them to make their second and third tier characters interesting. And, you know, I think I've said on the program before how excited I am, because most of these characters that are getting big movies and that are showing up in the movies are the guys that I read. And yeah. Black Panther is one of these characters that's been sort of I won't call him a cult favorite, because he's actually had major books and been a popular character for pretty much as long as he's been around. But this is the 18th Marvel movie in 10 years, and he's finally getting his due on the big screen. So I thought this would be a really good opportunity for us to talk about what we liked about the movie and didn't like the movie. In fact, I think we should go around the table and everybody kind of give us your capsule summary. Does that sound fair?
That sounds good.
Great. Yeah. Let's start with you, Aaron. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I dug the hell out of it. One of the things that I said prior to us recording was that I think, you know, I also am suffering a little bit of superhero fatigue. And that, you know, nobody's fault but mine. I was watching way too many superhero TV shows and seeing way too many superhero movies. But I felt like with Wonder Woman, I felt that this was an important movie, and I was determined to see it on opening weekend and just see what it is that Marvel could produce with this character and this culture in this particular time in our society. And they did not disappoint. I was incredibly pleased with the movie. Hands down, my favorite character, and this by the way, my love of the last Thor movie will start to give away a little bit of what I tend to like in movies like this. My favorite character, hands down, was M'Baku, the gorilla, yeah. The leader of the gorilla tribe.
Yep.
He was fantastic, played by Winston Duke. The moment he came on, and of course, you know, there's going to be spoilers, but the moment he came on and as a challenger to T'Challa for the throne, and they very much played him up like the villain, and oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And he's this big brawny guy, and it's got a big club for a weapon and this great gorilla mask and such. And so I thought, I wonder where they're going with this. You know, I wonder if this guy's going to end up teaming up with the villain, with Killmonger, with Eric Killmonger. And much to my delight and surprise, they did not do that. They went in the completely opposite direction. And M'Baku plays a very important role later in the movie. And one that I could just not have been happier with, that they turned him into a hero. And he has the, in my opinion, outside of my other favorite character, outside of the amazing character of Shuri, who was Black Panther's younger sister,
yes.
who was in charge of all the gadgets. She was the Q of Wakanda. and just loved her every time she was on the screen. I was grinning. I was just smiling.
Not just the cue, but also one of the things that keeps T'Challa grounded. You know, she's there to remind him. You know, I've seen you. As a kid, you're a goofus.
Oh my God, no, she is what every little sister should be.
Right.
To their bigger brother. they provide perspective. They keep them in their place. She's fantastic. So those two characters there alone, she had great funny lines. But M'Baku, I think M'Baku steals the show towards the end of the movie. He truly, truly does. And I would go, if they did a movie just about T'Challa and M'Baku teaming up and going off to fight some organization, I'd get the tickets on the first day they were available. Cool. I was so pleased with, in fact, so much so it really, and you guys, you know, when you get to your turn, talk about this or jump in, I was strangely emotional when they're introduced to Wakanda. We haven't seen it yet. And they're flying the ship and the ship's about to enter into it. And then the camouflage melds away and we actually see the city and it's just stunning and beautiful. And it's like this beautiful African fantasy version of New York or London. I got strangely emotional. I got the little lump in my throat and I got a little teary eyed and I couldn't explain it except that, maybe some part of me was saying, thank God, it's about time. And I said this for Wonder Woman, representation matters, folks. Representation matters. Our theater was packed and easily, I would say 60 to 70% of that audience were Black. And that was and kids and families, and it was just, it just filled me with such joy to see that, to look around and say, holy cow, this movie's important to a lot, to millions of people.
Yeah.
This movie is important. So just to get that out of the way, so know that I was entering into it with that sort of those heady thoughts. And so I found myself again just strangely emotional in different parts of the film, and you know, was just completely swept up in the story of T'Challa and his rise to become king and such. I want to say that I have one quibble. I have one quibble, and the quibble has to do with a problem I have with all Marvel movies, and it could have been easily fixed. But it's such a quibble compared to everything else that worked in the movie for me. Okoye, the amazing Okoye, and her battles standing shoulder to shoulder with T'Challa. I mean, holy cow. And then, of course, you know, Lupita Nyong'o's character, Nakia, she was, I mean, every character in the movie was so much more than I was expecting. The villain, Eric Killmonger, you know, I thought, okay, I kind of see where they're going with him, you know, sort of the hardened mercenary and blah, 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 blah. And then, the motivation, why he's doing what he's doing, the wrong he is trying to right. I mean, I read some people commenting on the internet where they're like, it was almost too good. I kept cheering for Eric Killmonger. I kind of wanted Eric Killmonger to succeed. And it's a great position that the filmmaker puts you in, where you start out, you're cheering for T'Challa and the spirit of his ancestors, his father T'Chaka, and you're like, come on, these are righteous kings and absolutely. And then you find out the mistake, you find out what was done to Eric, and then suddenly you're going, oh no. And so was T'Challa. T'Challa's conflicted. And so he's sitting there going, oh my goodness, this is wrong. The ancestors are wrong. And so it just he learned as much from his mentor father figure as he did from Eric Killmonger. I mean, he was influenced by both.
Okay. So what was your quibble?
My quibble is, and I understand probably why they did it. It was probably money, time, etc. I wish that Eric Killmonger, when he put on the suit, that it had looked like something other than Black Panther. That's it. That is my only quibble. If he had put on that suit and it had glowed golden and he'd looked like a lion with a big mane and the more powerful build. I mean, first of all, to story-wise, the Black Panther killed his father. He would not want to become the Black Panther. He would want to take over Wakanda, but he would not want to be the Black Panther. He would want to be his own ruler, his own guy. And just to have seen that difference of this big maned lion-like, you know, a villain fighting the more sleek Black Panther. I mean, visually, it would have been more stunning. I think it would have been more interesting.
I will address your concern.
Okay, but again, for purposes of what we had, it made sense why he would look that way. And right. I actually think just for purposes of, you know, that the model was built, the animations were done, you know, the textures were done, it would be easier to make him look like Black Panther and paint him gold than it would have been to design a completely a lion-like suit of vibranium. Well, although I think it would have been way cooler.
There is a story element in place that prohibits that. So I'll talk about that.
Okay. I'm actually very interested to hear that, but no, overall, I loved it. I it's fantastic. I recommend everybody go out and see this movie. It does not disappoint on all levels. I think it completely satisfies.
Cool.
And it was an incredibly successful Marvel movie. So,
all right, Ben, that's one yes. Do you are you concurring?
Yes, I'm going to concur. I'll try not to repeat everything he just said, although it's all true. I liked everything about the movie. We also, so I saw it with my wife and son this morning. And James's only quibble, and it's a very specific quibble, is he wanted to hear more of the Kendrick Lamar song from the trailer in the movie.
Nice.
Because it's such the trailer's beautiful with the Kendrick Lamar song. He wanted to hear a little more of that. I mean, I spent the whole movie kind of being impressed by the various elements that they the score of this movie includes a lot of various elements and also the Marvel sound, which I thought was really impressive. So I didn't hate the music. James didn't hate the music either. I didn't have that quibble with the music that James did.
So aside from the Kendrick Lamar song, James dug it.
Yeah. Oh man. Yes.
Natasha Duggett. Okay, cool.
It was like watching a comic book in all the good ways. So yeah.
Yep. Right. Well, I got to tell you, I enjoyed the bejesus out of it. Of course, I've been excited to see Black Panther ever since Captain America Civil War. You know, that was such a cool wrinkle to this existing storyline. And what a great way to introduce him as a character. And what I liked about that was that his introduction was handled flawlessly. They did such a great job of giving you the capsule summary that when we get to this, we don't really, they give us an obligatory flashback, but it's literally a flashback. It's about 2 seconds worth of the old footage. I mean, you know, it's not a retelling or anything. And so what instead we get is this wonderful deepening and enriching of the Wakandan ceremony and the lifestyle. And of course, it's very important initially to introduce it, because then when they introduce it, then when they get back to it in the middle of the movie, we know how it's supposed to go. I'll tell you what's interesting about this, and this was really cool. I didn't know we were going to get so much of Wakanda in the movie, which I thought was great. And so what you need to know, Aaron, okay. And this is why your lion can't work.
No, come on.
The five tribes.
I'm open to being convinced.
The five tribes that form Wakanda, yep, were essentially, these tribes basically tracked their lineage back to Egypt when they fled the pharaohs, okay? They took with them Egyptian and other animal cult deities that they worshipped and sort of converted into the sort of Wakandan pantheon. Okay, so Bast is the god of the goddess of the panther people. Okay, the gorilla god is Hanuman. They have I forget, one of the other tribes is the lion cult, and I think I'm trying to remember what the name is, but there's a lion cult, there's a crocodile cult, there's one other one too. Each one of the five nations of cultures that make up Wakanda have a different totem deity figurehead that they worship. So Killmonger is of the panther people. Right. Now, I think what they did, which was probably as much as they could do. Yeah, I mean, certainly you're right. They could just ignore that and have him, absolutely, you know, I'm the white lion.
And by the way, right, the hell with that. Even if that is true, and I don't think it breaks anything, him going in there specifically as an outsider, he would not want to adopt it.
Right.
He wouldn't come in and say, well, I want to be your new Black Panther. He was saying, screw it. I want to change everything.
I liked that they gave him instead of the silver around the neck, he had the gold around the neck, and they gave him leopard spots,
right,
which is kind of, and here's why that's interesting. Briefly in the comic, for those of you that don't know, Black Panther, the character, predates the Black Panther political party by 3 months. Okay. It is entirely possible that one influenced the other. Okay. But there's no evidence for that, so I'm not making that claim nor suggesting that. Okay.
Okay. Fair enough.
But there was a time once the political party got more militant and became more controversial, Black Panther temporarily changed his name in the Marvel comics to the Black Leopard.
Oh,
and so he changed it back in the 70s when I was wrong to do this. I am who I am, you know, and I'm going to be proud of that.
Right.
And so that was that was of course part of the shifting cultural tides in the 1970s anyways.
Right.
And so I thought it was very interesting that whenever his vibranium suit appears out of the necklace, that it's got a leopard motif. I thought that was really cool. See, That's a deep cut for the super nerds.
Right. No, I'm glad that they at least did that, right? That he looked a little bit different. But I mean, I've seen
he could have looked more different, and could have just ignored the panther motif and said, "Make me a battle suit."
Right, you know? Right. I mean, there's a really iconic image of you can find it on the internet of Killmonger fighting Black Panther from the comics, and he's wearing that looks a lot like that mask that he took off in the museum that he found the mask and put it on. He goes, "I like this mask." But essentially he has a golden mane. He has that very leonine face. His colors are primarily gold and scarlet.
Yeah.
Whereas the Black Panther's black and silver and it's got the little panther ears. He looks like a lion. If you look at that picture,
right,
he looks like a lion. So I think that, the comic creators had it right. They wanted to show visually. Yes. When these two clash, they must look different.
It's got to look different, right?
Correct.
Absolutely.
So, and again, like I said, it is such a minor quibble. It is such a minor quibble. To me, if he had looked like that, if he had looked like that gold and red lion, I would have been like, oh, yep, no, perfect Marvel movie. They can stop making movies. They don't need to make any more movies now.
I'm gonna go ahead and channel Joseph here for just a minute.
Okay.
Because one of the things that you're right. This has that mirror duality that's in a lot of the Marvel movies, where the villain and the hero are essentially cut from the same cloth, and it's ideology that separates them.
Right.
Also, something that a lot of people haven't really sort of keyed into. And I think I probably need to write a very long essay about is this is another movie about the sins of the fathers coming back on the their progeny.
Right.
And that's a very, very big motif in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Father figures and the failures of the father, or the desire to be a good father, or the absence of a father. And what you have here is this is a real common theme. Now, also, they, you know, are keeping the tradition alive of making sure that every single villain they introduce gets killed.
Yeah.
We can't have nice things or a recurring villain. But I am going to go ahead and now that I've channeled Joseph, because I think these would be complaints, and certainly we've talked about this in other Marvel movies.
Well, yeah. Let
me go ahead and offer up two things. Okay. This is the 18th Marvel movie in 10 years. At this point, they have developed their own style of storytelling and filmmaking. Okay?
Right.
Nobody has ever tried to do what they're – and by the end of the year, by the end of 2018, there'll be 20 movies in 8 years. That's a significant accomplishment, especially when they're telling an evolving story that they're really turning into a shared universe, and we're all buying into it.
Right.
So I contend that the Marvel movies have become their own genre, and as a genre, they're obeying certain rules. Genre fiction, genre movies, that's the whole point of a genre, is that it has a set of tropes and conventions that are specific to that given genre. There are certain things you're going to see in a Western, you know, that make it a Western. There's certain things you're going to see in a horror movie that make it a horror movie. That's why it's called a genre. Marvel has invented the genre of the Marvel superhero movie. It's different from other superhero movies. And I think that's one of the ways that they've been successful in ways that maybe some of the other companies have been, have had mixed or limited success with.
Right.
So I think that's actually a feature, not a bug. Okay. Right. And the other thing is I think it's okay, especially since some of these villains, you know, Claw actually appears in the background in Captain America and comes to the fore in this movie where he's eventually, you know, disposed of.
Right.
I think it's okay that they're dispatching their villains. I used to be on your side with this, and now I'm thinking differently, and here's why. They've got depending on where we start, 40 to 75 to 80 years worth of material to draw from.
Right.
If you keep a villain alive, the temptation is going to be great to repeat the movie. Okay.
Right.
I'm thinking specifically, and here, and Exhibit A, Superman Returns. Bryan Singer decided that he wanted to erase Superman 3 and 4 and remake Superman 3 as here's what happens after he dispatches the Kryptonians. And so he has Kevin Spacey play Lex Luthor, and Superman's been in space looking for other survivors of Krypton all this time, and he's not been on Earth, and he comes back, and he comes back, and Luthor has remade himself. He's now the kind of wealthy industrialist that's closer to the comics. He's out of jail. What's the first thing he does? Decides to perpetrate a real estate scam. He goes right back into real estate. And one of the reasons why Superman Returns fails like it does is because it does not break any new ground. It tells no new story. It doesn't really give us anything different. It doesn't advance, you know, a real Superman 3 remake would have advanced the plot. Having, you know, there are characters that have never shown up in a Superman movie, and they've made seven of them, right? Right. We've never seen Brainiac. What the hell?
Sort of.
Well, right, right. But you see where I'm going with this, right?
Right.
So,
right.
So Claw has always been a third tier villain who has bedazzled and bedeviled Iron Man and several other guys. And he just keeps coming back like a bad penny. My sonic device is more powerful than ever, Iron Man. With it, I could easily overcome your repulsor rays. They don't want to do that.
Right.
So
no. But see, I have no complaints about them killing villains. I kill all the villains you want. That's not my complaint.
Stack
my
them up like cordwood.
Right. My complaint is that when you have Doctor Strange, you don't pit him against evil Doctor Strange. When you have Black Panther, you don't pit him against evil Black Panther. When you have, you know what I mean? It's like,
sure.
Have the villains be very different from the hero. And again, it's just, this is by the end, it's very clear. It's a personal quirk that I have, that I want the villain to, and they could even be like an evil version of. A good example of that is the Joker and Batman. They are basically opposite sides of the same coin, but they look nothing alike.
Yeah, sure.
And they act nothing alike, but they essentially are the same disturbed, psychotic individual with an obsession. They both are, but they're just opposite sides of the same coin. So that's all I wanted with Eric Killmonger. I mean, I don't mind that it is a battle of ideology. That's fantastic. I don't mind that he is trying to love that he's trying to upend everything that T'Challa's trying to keep in place. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So already he was so different from T'Challa in motivation, in personality, in how he acted and how he carried himself. Make him look different. Make him look different in that last big battle that they're having with each other. So you visually, so you know, it's all a visual medium, right? So visually, you are seeing what thematically you have been seeing. Yeah. Two very different people going at each other, and it's all just representative of how they're yin and yang. They're the opposite sides.
I think it would have been very interesting if they'd given him some sort of twist on his special forces uniform, like a cross between like a Black Ops. You know, and maybe camouflage pants, almost make him look like literally a guerrilla jungle fighter, you know?
Right. Or even like, imagine the scene again, and God, as a screenwriter, I can't help but do this, but imagine the scene. He goes in, the people that are there after Shuri's runoff are showing him the suits, the Black Panther suits. And he's like, you know, here you are, my king, blah, blah. And him looking with disdain at this Black Panther thing. And he says, oh no, I want a vibranium suit, but not that. And then boom, the next thing we see, He's being fitted with something, and like we don't even know what it's going to look like, right? They're putting this weird gold collar on him, and we're like, is it going to look like the Black Panther? What? And then when he activates it, we are so shocked and delighted that he looks nothing like Black Panther.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, because everything else about Eric Killmonger worked wonderfully for me.
Yes, his whole attitude, his the reason why he feels the way he does, I thought that was a particularly a smart, you know. What's nice about it is I've seen a little kvetching on the side of the people who hate this notion that somehow comics have suddenly become progressive, and there's a little of it, and it really is minor. Most people that are watching it are coming out of it going, that was great. And they're not talking politics, but the whole thing is a discussion of, you know, isolationism, or, you know, expansionism, you know, colonialism versus, you know, nationalism. I mean, there's a real, there's a lot of interesting points being brought up, and,
and there's a lot of direct, I mean, Blythe was mentioning this, there's, you know, without actually beating you over the head, because I don't think it does, but you can draw the direct parallels to that movie and what is happening right now in our country, right now.
It's not subtle.
No, it's not. No, it's not. But I love that it is writ large. I love that it is almost like a fable that we're watching. You know, a parable almost, and it works, you know, there's so much good in this movie. And I think there's a reason why it's resonating with audiences, not just for how important it is for representation and such, but just the themes it explores of isolationism, of, you know, militarism versus restraint, of reaching out and helping other people when you are one of the richest and most advanced nations on the planet, but not right. wanting to do so.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh, parallel after parallel after parallel. Blythe was like, oh, well, that was an interesting movie about the United States. And yeah, and she's right. It is an interesting movie about the United States. It's allegory.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, speaking of allegory, I'm going to go ahead and tip my hand to one of the things I'm going to be talking about in my essay. Okay. You know, this is one of the few movies that allows the main character, T'Challa, to directly confront his father upon learning of the truth and his mistake and what he did. It's very, I can't think of another Marvel movie that's let that play out. Although, interestingly enough, Civil War shows Tony wanting to try and make some sort of peace with his father before his father dies.
Right. Although they did, arguably, I would say they did it in the last Thor movie, where Odin sits and has that conversation.
Yes.
With
yes,
Thor, yeah, right before Thor, he dies.
Yes, you're right. That does happen in Thor, and that's a very important thing, because we haven't gotten that in a lot of the other movies. I think one of the reasons why these characters are showing up as mirrors of one another is so that these guys get to punch their dad. I hate to be that way about it, because, you know, I'm just reminded of the conversation in Fight Club, both the book and the movie, where they're getting on the bus and saying, if you could fight anybody, who would you fight? And I forget if it's Jack or Tyler Durden says, William Shatner. And the other one says, oh, good answer. And he goes, yeah, who would you fight? And he goes, my old man, you know? Right. And I think that there's maybe a little of that, working that stuff out, for being a series of characters who by and large have made an excellent course correction to be more inclusive. Yep. And more representative.
Yep.
There is an awful lot of unresolved white privilege guilt that gets kicked around in these movies.
Yep.
I don't know that that's a bad thing. I don't think it is. I do think it's worth noting that as far as metaphors go and as far as reasons for doing why people are doing what they're doing, they've done an excellent job of tapping into something that Generation X specifically hasn't, probably some of its deepest problems with, and that's parents.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think it's also helping us to do something that's very important. I think a lot of the struggle right now is that Americans are having a hard time reconciling our violent past with how we see ourselves today. And I think this is reflected beautifully in the Thor movie, with you know, it's the same thing when T'Challa says that this is an enemy of our own making, you know, in the form of Eric Killmonger. I think it's the same thing essentially that Odin realizes that Hela is a villain of his own making, of his early conquest and his bloodlust, and his desire to rule over something. And now that he's conquered it, now he has to actually be the wise, benevolent ruler, right?
Right.
he can't be the warmonger anymore. And I think those same themes are being explored in Black Panther. And I think that really is resonating. All of these arguments that people are having about Second Amendment and the shootings and our love of guns and our gun culture, you know, and they're like, well, some people are going, well, where did that come from? Oh my gosh, read a history book. You can see where it comes from.
Yeah.
We have had a very, very violent past, and now we're not that way. And we're trying to somehow make it into like a nice shiny hole. And it's not going to be that. It's going to be this really, really, troubled, violent, bloody past, and then a hopeful future. But you can only look forward, right? You acknowledge your mistakes, obviously. And that's the other thing that Black Panther does that I love. The ending is one of the most hopeful endings of any Marvel movie that I've seen. Ending just made, and this is the big problem we were talking about Superman, you know, before, like the failure of Superman is that you should walk out of Superman feeling like I am ready to make the world a better place. I'm so inspired that I cannot wait to go out and do good. That's what a Superman movie should make you feel. Sadly, the last several did not. This one did. I walk out of Black Panther smiling, feeling good, understanding that if there is to be good in the world, it starts with me and with my actions.
Right.
It was amazing. It was such an uplifting movie in that respect. And I think that's something else that Marvel had kind of lost. They were so focused on working towards the Infinity War and the whole Thanos thing that I think they'd lost sight of that a little bit. You know, Wonder Woman had it wonderfully. And I think the last several Marvel movies I'd seen weren't really ending that way. And it's like, okay, it's really more just a setup for the big Infinity War that's coming. Well, and although they did that in Black Panther, that's not what that ending was about. The ending was not about setting it up.
It's really nice to be in on the joke. You know, that was what's funny because, you know, this is no offense, but, you know, what can a bunch of farmers teach us? And of course, you know, T'Challa smiles, Shuri smiles, Martin smiles, and everybody's kind of smiling, and nobody else is, everybody's like, I don't get it. I don't understand. That's really funny, you know. I think Marvel does realize this, and I'm going to go ahead and offer, without defending Marvel, because I think you're right. They're definitely working towards, you know, there's nothing that says that the Infinity War two-parter won't be dark, but they have done a really good job of positioning several movies around the darker ones that will be fun. Ant-Man and the Wasp being a really good example, you know, that's clearly going to be another caper. It's either going to take place, you know, probably it'll take place before Infinity War.
Yeah. Have you seen the villain? Oh, I squealed for joy. The villain is not a shrinking insect-like villain.
That's right.
It is the ghost. It is nothing like Ant-Man and Wasp. And I was like, hurrah, cool. Huzzay!
Although you need to know that there's talk that Lawrence Fishburne is going to be
the termite.
Bill Foster, who is in the comic Black Goliath.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah, that would be sweet.
Yeah. So, but he's going to get big like, Giant Man. I think we can overlook it since it's going to be Morpheus, you know?
Yeah. Right. That would be, I love things like that. I love when movies just embrace the wild variety to be found in comics, just how radically different one character can be from another. Yeah. Don't limit yourself. When you have literally a roster of hundreds of characters that you can choose from, don't pick the villain that looks just like the hero. Oh my God.
Yeah. There's a ton of really good second and third string villains that Marvel can be using. And of course, best example, recently, the Vulture, that's always been sort of like, you fly. I don't get why that's scary.
And by the way, I don't know why. Vulture's always been one of my favorite Spider-Man villains. I don't know why. I don't know why. Right after Dr. Octopus, the Vulture's been my favorite villain. And to see him so beautifully realized by Michael Keaton, holy cow, let me tell you that I walked out a very happy customer.
See, there's room in those second and third tier guys to put that stuff in there. You know what I mean? Because I think probably one of the biggest, I would never want to get cast as the Joker, because the style sheet for the Joker now has already been clearly defined. There's only so many different turns you can take before you're doing a Ledger or you're doing a Hamill or you're doing a Hammer Ledger. But with the Vulture, who are you comparing that to? No one. Ulysses
animation
Keaton,
in the 60s. Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
Yeah, Keaton made that character his own, and that was brilliant.
Ditto Circus with Claw. He made Claw this kind of cackling weirdo.
In that respect, by the way, I agree with Ailey Martinez. I think that the strength of these movies have been that they can't rely on decades of everyone knows what the Joker's like. They have to figure out what makes this character interesting. If we're gonna spend all this money and time, we have to figure out why this character will be compelling to an audience.
Yeah.
Rather than just put him in white makeup and have him laugh maniacally.
Right.
I agree. I actually do think that the Marvel movies, it was a blessing that they had to reach into these lesser known characters and try to make them as interesting as the Supermans and the Spider-Mans and the X-Men. And, that was a very fortuitous thing for them.
Ben, you have been, you've been kind of quiet. Have you been thinking up a brilliant idea over there?
Tell me that.
When the Jeremy Irons Paste Pot Pete rules the screen in the next Spider-Man movie, again, it's going to prove you all right, but it's bound to happen.
I'll have you know, sir, he changed his name to the Trapster. Okay.
Well, save it for the sequel there, Mark.
Oh, I see. He gets one movie. They're going to kill him. They'll kill him at the end. It's going to happen.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. No, on his dying breath, he'll say, I should have called myself the Trap. And that's it, guys. God, Paste Pot Pete. I have not thought of that name in so long.
Well played, sir. Good
he
job.
Is without question the best Spider-Man villain. I mean,
as one of the founding members of the Frightful Four, which included the character the Wizard, whose costume included a giant bulbous purple helmet.
Like wizards have.
Like you do, if you're going to be the Wizard.
Didn't he just throw these little spinning discs at you that just made you float? Like, wasn't that his power?
He was a gadgeteer. He had special devices that only his intellect could dream up.
He was the Wizard, like Mr. Wizard, not like wizards like you think of wizards.
No, but, he was not a Gandalf inside in his world.
That was his supervillain name when he first appeared, though. They had to shorten it. I'm the Wizard like Mr. Wizard, not like wizards like wizards. And then they shortened it. He fought Thor once, and it was weird, and then he just shortened it.
Funny costumes. Speaking of funny costumes, I'd love to see a good Mysterio. I would love to see Mysterio done really well. Because I've always been fascinated by a villain that basically wore a fishbowl and then what looked like green fishnet, a fishnet body stocking.
I love that the brooches that held his cape in place were the eyes. Yes, so that his chest was eyes staring at you. Hey, buddy, my eyes are up here. No, they're right there. And then his head is this opaque dome. I don't know how they're gonna make that work as a costume.
I don't know but man, I
so want that. Yeah. That's Ditko at his best, man.
Yeah. And that sometimes he has powers and sometimes he doesn't.
Right, right. Yeah.
And but isn't the whole thing that he has no powers? It's all just
effects. He was a special effects.
He's like a stage magician.
Well, he was a special effects artist who didn't get his due.
Oh, that was good.
And so I'm telling you what they need to do. At some point in time, because again, there's plenty of room to work here. They need a Mysterio and they need a Chameleon in Spider-Man movies, because both of these characters impersonated Spider-Man to make him seem like a bad guy at one point, you know. Nice. And so anyways,
maybe they can set him up in Venom. I don't know.
We've left Wakanda for Queens.
We have. And I do want to go back to Wakanda, you know, just to say that. Yeah, you know, wow, what a movie. The experience was an emotional one for me. It was visually stunning. I loved every single face I was watching, every actor. I mean, I was like, talk about a film with so many beautiful people. That is another thing, right? That's another thing that it just I know movies have movie stars, and movie stars are pretty to look at and such, but every time I found myself looking at one of these actors, I was just sitting there going, God damn, that woman is beautiful. Or man, that man is handsome. And mm-hmm. I couldn't help it. I was just admiring all and their costumes and the colors. And it's just like, holy cow, more of this, please. More of this.
There was definitely what I liked about it was they did a really good job of subtly incorporating Kirby's futurism with the African motifs. There's several times there's things in the background that have that kind of jagged Kirby look to them. But then they use African colors and textiles and all that kind of stuff. And of course you're going to hear Afrofuturism thrown around a lot, this. I was kind of mentally clocking this weekend. Okay. Who came to the movies for the two of you that are just tuning in for the first time? I own a movie theater, in my small town, the makeup of the audience was primarily Hispanic and white, but there were a lot of people that I had never seen before, Hispanic and black, and there were probably more people that had not seen all or any of the Marvel movies that were coming to this movie than any of the other things prior to that. You know, there is a buy-in on the third Thor movie that you have to kind of be willing to do. Same thing with Spider-Man. Didn't I watch three Spider-Man movies 10 years ago? Well, yeah, but this is a different one.
Blythe shared a video with me, by the way. Did you see this, Mark, where there was a showing of it, I believe, in South Africa, and the audience comes out after the movie and they're dancing. They're just dancing for joy in the lobby after watching.
Oh, Black Panther. No, I didn't see. I didn't see that.
I'll have to find that video and send it to you.
That's probably going to make me cry.
See, again, guys, it was strangely emotional for me. You know, although I don't often talk about my heritage, I am a minority. I'm Mexican, and it's just easy for especially since I'm into films and I'm a screenwriter and all that. You know, I immerse myself in film, and I've seen a lot of old black and white films, and I watch a lot of movies. And so when a movie does something like that, you know, you, I notice it really sticks out, and it sticks out in such a way that, that it makes me almost kind of gasp and go, this is astounding. This is, I want so much more of this.
And
we just, it's really hard to get. It's really the battle for diversity is waged on a daily basis in Hollywood, to get more female directors, more directors of color, to get more actors of color, to get themes that are relevant to those communities. It is a constant battle. It's a constant battle.
I don't know if you remember a few years ago when there was this massive push from Twitter for women to start getting more parts and be represented and all that kind of stuff. And it was right about the time that they announced Doctor Strange and they were kind of talking about having the Ancient One being a woman.
Right.
And so this was literally like several years ago now. And I'm mentioning that to you because, you know, it usually takes 3 to 5 years to get a film made. Yeah. Well, right now you guys are about to see more movies this summer featuring women in lead roles or being about women and specific experiences that women have than ever before. There's going to be one basically chick flick, let's call it, with quotes around it, a month starting in, I don't know, March and running all the way through August. And you go, well, one a month. Well, here's the deal. There hasn't been one a month ever. Right. You know, there's usually one or two a year. And so some of it's going to be like safe bets, like Melissa McCarthy and Amy Schumer, but they're doing a gender flipped Overboard remake, starring Anna Faris right now. And Anna Faris is, you know, who looks a lot like Goldie Hawn, as Kathy pointed out. She's the one who's poor with kids. And when the rich jerkhead has amnesia, she's the one who decides to pretend to be his wife so that he could take. Right. I mean, it's a total flip of that funny movie. But so the thing is this is we're seeing it right now with women. I think you're going to start seeing more things in terms of representation regarding Asian, Hispanic, African American, and so forth. Yeah,
God, I mean, they've already said. I mean, they're bringing Ryan Coogler back, the director who's black. They're bringing probably the writer Joe Robert Cole, who was black, to the next Black Panther movie. I mean, it's like, you know, the movie has made so much money that a studio would be foolish not to immediately start working on a sequel.
Right.
And if there is one language that Hollywood speaks,
and that's money.
It is money.
Yeah.
And if they sense that money, they're like, oh yeah, yeah, no, more movies with black superheroes, more movies directed by black directors, written by black writers, more. And that is one thing. The thing I kept crossing my fingers on when I knew this movie was coming out. I was like, please let it have at least a good as opening as, you know, I don't know, Ant-Man. You know, I was like, have it be at least as good as Ant-Man. And no, it has now had the best opening except for the Avengers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy cow. Nope. That's it. Floodgates are wide open.
Yeah.
And my hope is that we are going to see more of this sort of thing. You know, all of the awards that have been heaped on The Shape of Water, directed by Guillermo del Toro, another Mexican director, you know, it is, you know, we're at a tipping point, guys, in so many ways in our culture, in our society. We're at a tipping point politically. We're at a tipping point artistically. We're at a tipping point emotionally. I think. I'm really curious to see where we go from here, but well, I can sense it. We are on the precipice.
We're either
going to go sailing up into the air or we're going to go plummeting down onto the rocks.
Well, I think Marvel has got the best shoehorn in on this because they have the weight of their own product behind them. I'll tell you something. Like I said, in my small town, with the makeup of the audience being predominantly white and Hispanic, nobody came out of the movie angry. You know what I mean? Nobody came out of the movie like, I can't believe they did that. No, it was just the opposite. And the people that were coming in that were excited about this were the people that have already been in on all of, or some or most of all of the Marvel movies. Right. So, you know, this is the way to do it. And that is to just do it. Yeah. Don't wave your hand. Don't run up a flag. Don't fire off any flares. Just do it. Because people, you know, what I noticed is that everybody coming out of it was talking about it as if it was a James Bond movie, right? They were just like, oh yeah, that was great. And I was like, what about that thing at the end? And they were like, oh my God. Yeah. I was like, that's like some Lord of the Rings stuff. Like, yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It very much is. Yeah. And so that's what was cool about it was, you know, for the nine people online who are saying that the movie's too black, all of you need to go back and reread comics starting in the 1970s, because guess what? Yeah. Black Panther has never not been black. Wakanda has never not been black. And I'll tell you something else. Nine guys in a bunker. Those comics, when they were being sold and that they're being sold today, it's not just people of color that are buying them. It's white people that are buying them too. You know why? Because it's a good story. Yep. And story is universal, and struggles and conflict are universal. And those are the things that we all relate to, you know, having a dad that lied to us. That's some stuff that you don't, that does not have a color or a gender. Yep. So, you know, if any of you people in Hollywood are listening, you know, my advice is don't feel like you have to tell us what you're doing. Just make the good movie, right. You know? And you don't have to sub out anybody for anything. Just do the movie that you're going to do and let us realize, oh, you know, come to think of it, I just realized that cast was 50% black and 25% Hispanic. And, so this is a good thing. Pop culture can lead the way for stuff like this in a way that politicians are never going to get and don't know how to speak anyways. I just can't stand it when pop culture, when politicians try to use pop culture references and they get it wrong. It's just, it shows how in the tunnel they are about all of it. So this is where we can go from here.
That's part of what gives me hope. You know, I think that's what I'm sensing as part of that tipping point that we're at, is that all of the things that we're watching on television, that we watch on the internet, that we hear on the radio, they're all leading towards a different future, one that is not the future that those nine guys in the bunker really, really wish would come back.
Right.
And that gives me hope. That gives me hope that we are going to truly become just a beautiful multicultural society that embraces the differences and can't wait to learn about all the various religions and cultures and beliefs and everything that is just this wonderful melting pot that is our country, because we started to kind of lose sight of that a little bit.
That's true.
And I think it's engaging people. You know, I think people are now more engaged, certainly, than they were, I think, in the last election. I hate to get too political, and I won't. I'll stop soon. But for me, it is a good sign that we are moving forward in out the right direction. So I hope that continues.
And that direction should hopefully include vibranium fleecewear, because I want gravity defying vibranium boots. And I think we can all agree that's really what it's all about, is making sure that we all have access to really cool vibranium shit.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, I actually thought I knew what vibranium was. And then I saw the movie and I realized, oh, I have no fucking idea what vibranium is. they use it as an energy source, and it's a metal, and it's a hat, and it's a brooch, and it's a pterodactyl, and I'm like, holy cow, what the hell is this thing? It's like the magic substance, you know?
It is flubber. Yes, it is. it is space flubber, and with it you can do just about anything.
You can even cut a tin can with it.
That's true. Oh my God, fellas, we are getting the red eye.
Oh God. Wait a minute. How did Maximilian get to Wakanda?
He's on a, what can I tell you, man? It's a cultural exchange program.
Darn it.
I know. Oh, they'll let anybody in these days, man. I mean, first the robots and next the androids. Where does it stop, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's over there holding up a sign, AIs matter.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Oh dear.
That's not a number of it's not ones and zeros. That's his kill list. All right, guys, we have to bring this episode to a close. Closing thoughts?
Yeah. So speaking of positivity, I'm just going to throw out a last thought, which is that Winston Duke is signed on to play M'Baku in Infinity War.
Outstanding.
We may only get a second of him, but he'll be there.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Very cool. Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Aaron?
Well, you know, I pretty much said what I want to say. Just, you know, remain positive, folks. Go see Black Panther. Support diversity in the arts. Support diversity in your town, in your businesses, in government, everywhere. Representation matters, and I'm feeling very hopeful about that.
Good. For my final thought, I'm gonna encourage you guys who are comic fans, but maybe you haven't delved deeply into Black Panther, to go and check out some of the old Black Panther comics, specifically the Black Panther comics from the 70s that featured Rich Buckler, Jungle Action, the Christopher Priest run, and I'm going to make a plug here for Marvel Unlimited. It's their app that you can put on your tablet or your phone, and you can just read 10,000 Marvel comics in a swatch, and all of the Black Panther stuff is online right now, Marvel Unlimited. So it's very easy to pay $10, read, you know, 100 issues of comics, and then, you know, cancel your subscription or whatever. But definitely check those out. They're worth mentioning because initially they weren't, but soon in the 70s and 80s, they began being written by people of color. And that actually changes the story and gives it more agency and intensity. So the Black Panther comics are definitely worth your time.
Awesome.
Yes. The Gentleman Nerds is a Cloak and Dagger production, written by Aaron D'Arrive, Ben Gibbs, and Mark Finn, with additional material provided by Christopher Priest, Ta-Nehisi Coates, and the Nation of Wakanda. Music composed and performed by the wonderfully talented Ben Gibbs, promotional material logos, and the Gentleman Nerds mascot created by artistic goddess Michelle Fitzpatrick. The Lobot Lounge bouncer is Maximilian, and our special guest bartender was Forrest Whitaker. Our sound editor, mixer, and intentional producer is Ben Gibbs. Our executive producer and the man that we pray never gets superpowers is Aaron D'Arrive. The Black Panther was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and premiered in Fantastic Four number 52 in 1966. Eric Killmonger was created by Don McGregor and Rich Butler and premiered in Jungle Action number 6 in 1973. And Mark Farnash is the man in the gorilla suit. Web hosting by Rustix Interactive with technical assistance by Blythe Christopher D'Arrive. Please join us in the Lobot Lounge for another episode of the Gentleman Nerds. And remember, Red Skull lives.
Whew. I have the plane is back.
It's okay. Back. It's all right. The ships, they've really been flying overtime. No, I mean, I think it's great that they've opened up the borders. I mean, I love it. You know, it's still very expensive to get there, but you know, we're gonna save up.
I think that was a Latveria Airlines that just flew into.
Well, they've had a deal with Latveria for a while, so.
Interestingly, Latverian Airlines uses the heater that's in my house as the jet engine. So,
nice. Yeah. Well, Latverian Airlines has a great interest in the vibranium stores, I'm sure.
It's true. It's true. So much so that they've changed their slogan to Fly Latverian Airlines, or else. Oh.
it's not the most sudden.